Accession number 18022, relay team.
Brigadier Cowan, Reel 8. Can you tell me what you'd been told about Aiden in your preliminary briefings before arriving in that place?
Very little, I think, if I remember correctly. We did a certain amount of background reading, but I think we felt we were going there to Aiden Town. We weren't expecting to go anywhere other than Aiden Town. And the old business of keeping the peace, I suppose, is what we're expecting to do. And that's roughly how it turned out, with the added bonus of a trip to the Radfan, only for a fortnight, but just to give us an opportunity of seeing what life was like up in the mountains. And I can remember driving, and I chose to drive from Aiden into the mountains because I was told it was something exciting and something one ought to do rather than flying there. And suddenly, you know, driving across the plain, and you suddenly saw these great hills sort of jutting up into the sky. And it was awesome, really. Anyway, we drove up there and had a look round, took over from the coasting guards. And we really just, I suppose, we practiced a little bit of limited warfare in that we were able to use artillery and mortars for defensive fire. Well, now, very rarely in peacetime does anybody get the chance of operating that sort of system. And so both from our own officers' point of view, on the one hand, the gunners' point of view, on the other hand, the mortars' point of view, and indeed all the soldiers being the recipients of this. And so we, I suppose, because the people in charge had a wartime background, and because we had been taught that it's fashionable to have a defensive fire in the evening and in the morning, we did just that. And it was very impressive. What the local tribesmen thought about it all, I'm not sure, but, you know, we were told it was okay to do it, and so we did it.
Could this have been done perhaps for demonstration purposes?
Yes. It was partly from a training point of view, but more specifically from a demonstration point of view.
Did this fortnight in the Radfan take place early in your tour of duty and Aiden, all halfway through or towards the end?
I think early. Really, to get it out of the way so that we could then concentrate on the job we were really there to do.
Did the whole battalion go up?
Yes. And were well distributed in company areas.
How far apart were the company areas?
I honestly can't remember, but I mean, they were by no means close. I mean, they weren't mutually supporting or anything like that. They were definitely separate areas,
so
company bases.
Company outposts.
Yes. I mean, rather, as one had done in Malaya, the battalions well separated round about the countryside, and each company given an area to look after.
What about your battalion headquarters? Where was that?
That was up in the hills.
Were you co-located with a rifle company or with headquarter company?
It's awful, I can't remember. We were certainly co-located with somebody, and I suspect it was a rifle company, but I honestly can't remember.
What sort of positions did you have?
Well, I suppose Sanger's is probably the best answer to that question. And the other interesting thing was that we, for the first time in this battalion's recent history, we had to relearn about pickets to get the battalion up there. And so that was quite interesting.
Did the battalion go up then on foot?
No, it went in vehicles.
And how were the pickets deployed?
On the hilltops, quite widely separated, but I mean, quite clear that we were there and quite clear that we were in business to protect the main body.
Did they go up on the hilltops by vehicle or by going up on foot?
They went on foot.
Do you remember what basis you had for learning about this? Where did you turn for ideas about picketing?
Well, I suppose some historical records of some sort, but I absolutely can't remember what.
Because this is the kind of thing that was being done on the Northwest Frontier in the 1920s and 30s
absolutely.
And 40s.
But, I mean, you know, we're beginning to touch on one of my hobby horses because, I mean, so many things have to be relearned every time there's a new operation of some sort. And I'm looking ahead now, but when I went back to Malaysia, as it then became, for the second time, as G1 of a division, we studied in enormous detail the Chinese way of conducting operations and hearts and minds operations, these sort of things.
The Maoist theory.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, as far as it was all meticulously recorded in, I mean, voluminous records of these various exercises that we ran, both study periods and exercises with troops, and voluminously reported. And as far as I know, you know, it's all disappeared. And I suspect the same thing happens about any recording we did in Aden and so on. And so next time, if there is ever is a next time, which is perhaps less likely than it used to be, people are going to have to start from scratch.
Well, you can never tell with the strategic defence review's new emphasis on intervention operations.
Absolutely. And not to mention being ready for the unexpected.
Of course. Had now, you'd had experience of fighting in mountains in Italy during the Second World War. Had anyone else in the battalion had experience of mountain warfare that you knew of at the time you went to the Bradfan?
Don't think so. But, of course, it wasn't really mountain warfare. I mean, it might have been, but, I mean, it was almost like conducting a teut. I mean, it sounds ridiculous to put it in those terms, but, I mean, I don't think for an instant anybody thought that they were in tremendous danger, for instance. I mean, I think probably they thought that, you know, there might be old snipers about and things like that. But I don't think we really expected a proper attack. But having said that, we did both up in the hills and also down in Aden proper, we did take considerable trouble to look after our own protection, as being perhaps the first duty of a commanding officer is to look after his own people.
Failure to take precautions against a formal attack can often invite one.
Exactly, yes.
What sort of geographical locations were your company positions in? Were they on the highest ground up in the mountains?
Yes, they tended to be defensible areas, but we didn't select them. We took over from the people we took over from, and they in turn had taken over from somebody else. I mean, some other body had selected these areas sort of earlier on.
You mentioned that you had Sangers as defence works. Were these pre-constructed? Were they in any way permanent or solid constructions when you arrived?
I wouldn't describe them as solid or permanent, but certainly they were things that you could hand over and take over.
You mentioned that you had support from artillery and mortars to provide defensive fires. Where were those mortars and guns located?
Well, they were, I mean, they're up in the hills, not down in the valleys. But, I mean, I don't think that their locations were any different from they would be in other bits of countryside. I mean, you know, they were selected for places that were sensible places to deploy artillery and mortars. I don't think I could put it more in more detail than that.
Well, I was just wondering whether the mortars were actually integral within your battalion area and the guns further back. And whether the guns were actually located within established positions held by infantry to provide them with security.
Yes, I mean, in both cases the answer is yes.
What sort of accommodation did you have for living space?
Well, broadly, tentage. And I suppose there was the odd sort of shack of one sort or another, but broadly tentage.
But were these tents protected by sangers or walls of rock or anything of that sort, or were they just out in the open?
Mainly out in the open, but with sandbags around the bottom.
Did you have strict light discipline in the evenings?
Not really, no.
Did you attract any hostile action?
No.
So it was a fortnight of peace and tranquility?
More or less, yes.
Did you have any other sort of contact with the local population?
No, there was a local Arab battalion nearby, and we got vaguely involved with that, but not hugely.
But were they native to the area?
No, they'd come from the plain.
Brought up into the hills?
Yes. Mm.
What sort of active operations or training were you conducting while you were up there?
Mainly patrols, which was extremely good training.
What sort of patrols are those? Are they fighting patrols or reconnaissance patrols?
Mainly reconnaissance.
What sort of strength would they be?
Pretty small. Mm. I mean, perhaps a section. But, you know, if they'd made contact or if anything exciting had happened, we'd have been perfectly ready to send out fighting patrols or indeed something bigger than that, if necessary.
What distances did they go?
I suppose the answer for that, I don't think one could put in terms of miles and yards and things. I think one would say the distance that could reasonably be covered at patrol speed at night.
Did you send anything out in the daytime, or was it all at night?
It was mostly at night.
What is patrol speed at night in mountains?
That's a good question. I don't think you can generalise. I think it depends very much on the individual patrol, on the one hand, and the exact nature of the precise country that they're trying to traverse.
Was the object of these patrols operational, or was it mainly a training?
Bit of both.
Bit of both.
But I suppose, looking back on it, it was mainly training. And I mean, the whole object of us being in the hills, rather than doing our duty in the town, was to give us a fillip, I think is the right description, so that we could say that we'd actually done something rather than just in Aden Town and internal security arrangements. And it was exciting. I mean, just to be there, it's exciting countryside.
What was it like? Was it bare? Was it cultivated? Were the mountains rocky or smooth?
Yes, rocky.
Give a description of the,
yes,
the ground.
Rocky. Mm. And, I mean, there were sort of one or two fertile bits, but mainly rocky.
How did you arrange your resupply? Did that come up by road or by other means?
I can't remember. I suspect a bit of air.
Would that be helicopter rather than fixed wing?
That'd be fixed wing.
Airdrop.
Well, there were one or two landing strips, and I suspect that some of it came in that way. But I think mainly, see, we didn't really need much resupply because, you know, for only a fortnight, we took a lot with us. And I suppose we probably didn't have more than one resupply, maybe two. And some of it certainly came by road.
Did you have a good local source of water?
I think we must have done. But I don't remember where it was.
What sort of clothing and equipment did you carry on these patrols out at night into the mountains?
Awful. I'm going to say I don't remember again. It's terrible.
Did you manage to get out on patrol yourself at all while you were up there?
Not in any formal sense. No. I mean, I went out just to sort of see what it was like, in the same way as I'd done in Kenya and in Malaya, but not really.
Were there any hazards to health and hygiene you had to be particularly careful of up in the mountains?
Well, I suppose it was probably a mosquito area, but again, I really don't remember.
You were saying that it was designed to be a fillip for the battalion before they went off to the main business. Did the soldiers enjoy going up into the mountains?
Yes, very much so. And we had, having said we were not attacked, we had one casualty, in fact, up there, whose life was saved. It was a grenade attack. And his life was saved by what nowadays one would call a paramedic. And he was extremely well looked after and was flown down to Aden, to hospital. And he survived, although people thought he probably wouldn't. And that was our only casualty, in fact, during the whole time in Aden.
Do you remember when that happened? Was that a daytime attack or a nighttime attack? And the circumstances?
I think it was night.
Was this man in a base area or was he out on patrol?
No, he was in a company base. Oh. And I can't remember, it was either a grenade or a mortar. And I can't remember which. I've got a feeling it was a grenade.
And that was the only hostile
Yes.
activity?
Yeah.
What was the temperature like?
Hot by day, cold by night.
Do you remember having any trouble with dehydration?
No. But I suppose it was a potential problem. But certainly I don't remember it being an actual problem.
When you got back to Aden, what was your main role there and how did you carry that out?
Well, I suppose the fashionable phrase now would be to keep the peace. But there were search operations looking for weapons. There were roadblocks in the usual form of internal security operations. There was just patrolling to produce a presence. And this was all in Aden proper, Big Aden as opposed to Little Aden. We went to Crater, that unfashionable place, but nothing much happened in Crater while we were there. But it was tense. The whole period was tense because there were Belgian rocket things called blindicides, I remember, which used to get fired down Mala Strait every so often. And we were supposed to be looking for them and supposed to be preventing them because they were doing a certain amount of damage on the one hand and psychological damage on the other hand. But we found one or two, but we weren't very successful. And the local tribesmen, I suppose one would describe them as, were quite efficient at hiding their weapons.
This blindicide, was it a sort of bazooka or
yes.
rocket-propelled grenade?
Yes, no. It was a sort of mix as between a rocket-launched grenade on the one hand and a bazooka-type thing on the other.
You mentioned searching, setting up roadblocks, patrolling. These are all standard internal security tasks. Another one is guarding vital points. Did you do any of that?
Not in a big way, no. I think just occasionally we were told to do that. One of the places that was sort of within our orbit was Cormaxa Airfield, and indeed our camp, our desert camp, was just on the edge of the perimeter of the airfield. And so we had to go and do odd operations there from time to time. I don't remember having a detail on a daily basis to do the vulnerable point protection.
What other forces were in the area at the time?
Well, there was one Royal Anglian who were a residential battalion. We were an emergency battalion. And I can't remember if I mentioned this last time we met, but Tim Creasy, who was the commanding officer of one Royal Anglian. He and I knew each other a bit, but not very well. And I think we both taught at Camberley, but hadn't overlapped for very long. Anyway, when we arrived, Tim said, he got a bit of spare capacity in his accommodation, and he couldn't offer us all decent accommodation, but he could offer some, perhaps a company's worth. And so I said, look, very kind, etc., etc., but it's important we should all be in this together and we should all be treated the same and we should all have similar problems in Royal Anglian. And therefore, thank you, but we'd rather stay in our desert camp. Which I have no doubt was the right answer, but it was very kind of him to make the offer. The other interesting thing was the large regiment was still a fairly new concept then, and indeed the Royal Anglian Regiment were the first, the Royal Green Jackets were the second to do this thing. And within almost hours, certainly days of our arrival in Aden, people weren't talking about one Royal Anglian and four Royal Anglian, they were talking about the 1st Battalion and the 4th Battalion without any regiment attached at all. And we thought that was, a good sign.
Did you have lots of contact at all levels with the 1st Battalion? And was this something that developed naturally, if it did, or something that you encouraged?
We certainly encouraged it. I suppose it was the brigade headquarters sort of first caught on and started doing this, so we said that was very good for business, etc. There were various individuals in the two battalions who knew each other, but for Royal Anglian at that stage was mainly Royal Leicester still, although interestingly there wasn't a single company commander who was ex-Royal Leicester. Because on my arrival, there were one or two changes that had to be made. And sadly, we went, I say sadly, because from a strict regimental point of view, it was sad, really. We went to Aden without a single Royal Leicester Company commander. That changed as time went on, but it was a sign of the times, and I suppose is one of the reasons why I fetched up there in the first place, because they were thin on the ground.
Where did your company commanders come from, regimentally?
I think mainly from one Royal Anglian.
And what were they traditionally?
Norfolk and Suffolk. Norfolk and Suffolk, one. Northampton and Lincoln, two. Essex, Beds and Hearts, three. Royal Leicester, four. And then, of course, the Royal Leicester, the 4th Battalion disappeared. And then in a further defence review, the 3rd Battalion disappeared. And then I left with two. And the Green Jackets are left with one, the regular battalion.
What sort of security measures did you have at your desert camp?
Well, sandbags, I think, is the main answer to that. We obviously had sort of machine guns in suitable places around on the corners and so on. And because we were living in tents, and because I conceived it a possibility that the camp would be mortared, I said, sandbags, please. Literally all round, all the tents. And I forget the number we wanted. It was some huge number of sandbags. And Aidan said, we're very sorry, we haven't got that number. They must come from India. And so we were quite some time without sandbags. And then eventually they turned up. And so then, of course, we had to fill the bloody things. And everybody complained like bilio and said, this is absolutely ridiculous, quite unnecessary, and so on. But there was something happened that suggested it wasn't quite as ridiculous as all that. And so everybody filled their sandbags with a will, and literally every tent was protected.
What about the perimeter? Did you have a wire fence or mines or any other defences actually around the camp?
We certainly had a wire fence. And we certainly had, the fence was patrolled and so on. I don't remember any mines.
Was this a wire fence in the sense of posts with wire strung between, or coils of wire, or an apron,